supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for joining us on Voices in the Family. University of North Carolina positive emotions expert Barbara Fredrickson has some advice for all of us. It's time to upgrade our view of life's most powerful emotion, love. In her new book, Love 2.0, How Our Supreme Emotion Affects Everything We Feel, Think, Do, and Become, she defines love as micro moments of connection between people, even strangers. Experienced fully, these micro moments nourish our mental and physical health, deepen our understanding of ourselves and others. On today's show, psychologist Barbara Fredrickson joins us to talk about our capacity for connection at a time when many of us are expanding the way we reach out to one another through social media tools. Later on, we'll hear from Carlin Flora. She's a journalist who's written a book about how friendship influences us. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here.
I want to begin by borrowing a phrase from Andrew Lloyd Webber. Love really does change everything, doesn't it?
I'm thinking it does.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of ways that love influences our health, our outlooks, our wisdom, our ability to be connected to others.
Let me give out the phone numbers. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about love and what it really is and what it's not really. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Barbara, you start off in your book asking us to disengage from one of our most cherished emotions, from about what love is. Don't tell me you're going to deconstruct this wonderful emotion and turn it into something mechanical. You know, Erwin Yalom, the great existential psychiatrist out in Stanford, wrote a book called Love's Executioner. You know, he said when he had a patient come to him when they were in love, he hated that. What can you do in therapy with love except deconstruct it, which ruins it?
Well, what I'm hoping to do is not to ruin it, but to just give us another perspective from which to consider it. And in a way, we have so many cultural perspectives on love, from love songs and love stories and movies. And yet what I'm finding from the science of emotions is that none of these really map onto how your body would define love if it had a chance. Sort of looking at your heart's perspective, your physical heart, not your cartoon heart that you see on Valentine's Day. And, you know, even seeing love from the perspective of your immune system. That's the layer of love or a different definition that I'd like to add to the mix.
Well,
not necessarily deconstruct or supplant all of our other views of love, but to offer another one.
Well, let's follow up on that. So you say our bodies can describe love, and you know, lately there's more written these days about the wisdom of the body, how our bodies experience our lives without the filters of our minds and without judgments and without grasping for more or less. But when you think about it, Barbara, it's kind of amazing that we're just learning this.
Right. Well, one of the things that's, I think, prevented us in psychology from getting to this level is that it's hard to study emotions as they unfold across two or more brains and bodies at once. And that's what I'm trying to articulate here, is how when people share a positive emotional state with another person, there's actually a discernible biobehavioral synchrony that unfolds between them, you know, in addition to a mutual sense of care And in seeing how, our neural firings, our biochemistries, our nonverbal gestures all come into synchrony, it gives us a new perspective, but that has been hard to see just because of our research methods.
Well, I have to tell you, Barbara, when you said biobehavioral synchrony, I didn't get all warm and fuzzy like I do like I do with poems. We had a couple of weeks ago on the show, we had NYU president John Sexton on who wrote a show about baseballs, A Pathway to God. And throughout the book, he used the word ineffable to describe things that couldn't be described in words. He used love as an example. He knew that his wife loved him, but he couldn't describe how he knew that.
Right. Well, I think that in understanding more about how emotions are experienced, both at a physiological level and at a phenomenological level, I'm very interested in both. We can get a better handle on things that in earlier times used to be called ineffable or just too slippery to study. Emotions, escaped being targets of scientific scrutiny for so long just because they affect us at so many different levels at once. But the challenge as a scientist is to try to look at all those different levels, as many as you can. We're certainly not going to get them all, but we can start to include a little bit more in our view all the time.
So let's walk us through some of these levels, the ways in which love, as you define it, helps us nourish our mental health, our physical health, social, even spiritual, if you will.
Mm-hmm. The biobehavioral synchrony, I know that sounds like a jargon phrase, but what I'm trying to capture there is that really, when people are co-experiencing a positive emotion, that's what I call a micro moment of positivity resonance, or what I'm calling or suggesting that maybe we consider that to be love, your body's perspective on love. And, some of the ways in which two people start acting as one are visible, to our eyes. We can see the kind of synchrony that emerges in people's nonverbal gestures and their postures. But what we can't see with our, just with our eyes is the chemical, biochemical cascades that come into synchrony. There's research that shows that, when a parent and a child are, an infant and their parent are engaged in face-to-face play and are really positively engaged with one another, there's also an oxytocin synchrony that emerges in those special moments. And other work suggests that there's a really potent, widespread neural synchrony as people are engaged in conversation and really following what each other are saying. A lot of this is contingent on having some connection, physical, sensory connection with another person. It's not a kind of experience. This positivity resonance is not something that can emerge when you're texting offline with one another, but it really depends on eye contact, touch, shared voice, or one of these other ways of just being in the same place at the same time and having our senses register somebody's presence more than abstract words on a screen.
Well, I have to tell you, I noticed something as I was listening to you talking. I should tell our listeners that despite the fact that you sound like it, you're not in the studio. You're on an ISDN line in North Carolina. So I noticed while you were talking, and I was listening intently, I noticed there were several times I nodded my head in agreement. Now, there's nobody in the studio. There's nobody watching me nod my head. It was almost involuntary, but it was a kind of connection with you. It felt as though I was
so
with
much
you.
That can be carried by shared voice over the phone or over this kind of connection. We The vocal tract carries a lot of information about our current emotional state. And so we have access to what each other are feeling, and we can follow along so much just with shared voice. We get much less connection in these other more contemporary ways that we connect with others, which would be, you know, posting something or tweeting or texting. Because we'd lose that real-time sensory information. And our bodies need that kind of real-time sensory connection in order to form one of these micro-moments of positivity resonance or micro-moments of love.
You know, you talk about micro-moments, and it reminds me of the work of Paul Ekman when he talks about micro-expressions. And, you know, in preparation for the show, I was reading some of Ekman and Sylvan Tompkins. You know, these guys were on the forefront of describing emotions. But they said, and you study positive emotions, they said our basic emotions were sadness, happiness, anger, fear, disgust, and surprise. So you take surprise out as kind of in the middle. We've got 4-1 negative emotions to positive emotions. You're an evolutionary psychologist. There's got to be some reason for that.
Well, you know, actually, I did my postdoc training with Paul Ekman and other scholars of that era, so I really come from that same tradition and really value all of the work had been done. And the way the science of emotion started was to start with those attention-grabbing negative emotions. And in part because, you know, we don't have a absolutely unique facial expression for each positive emotion. I think that's one of the reasons why those early lists of what the emotions were only included one positive emotion for all those negative ones. There's less specificity amongst the positive emotions than the negative emotions. There's all kinds of areas where there's just an asymmetry between the positive and the negative. I mean, for one thing, there's a well-known phenomenon of negativity bias that, you know, our negative emotions just scream at us and shake our shoulders, whereas our positive emotions are often very subtle. They're very subtle states that we could just be blind to altogether unless we really pay close attention.
Agreed. I also think, I mean, it's going to sound a little arrogant because you're an evolutionary psychologist and I'm not, but it just seems to me there's an evolutionary reason for us to pay closer attention to our negative emotions that, you know, historically that saved our lives. It's like,
oh, exactly. You know, one way to think about this is that if you didn't get your negative emotions right, you could be eaten or otherwise killed or harmed. If you didn't get your positive emotions right, you missed an opportunity, and that wasn't going to end your life. But a lifetime of missed opportunities, you're going to grow a whole lot less, become a lot less wiser. So I think the time scale on which negative emotions affected our survival was right in the instant that you experience it. The time scale in which positive emotions save our lives is much longer. And this is what's key to my broaden and build theory of positive emotions, is that positive emotions accumulate and compound and build our resources for survival, so that, you know, a month from now, a year from now, we're better equipped to deal with threats to life and limb. So positive and negative emotions affect us on very different timescales.
I want to look at that later in the show more carefully about how we can nurture it and what the implications are. We're talking with, I guess we can call you a positive psychologist, Barbara Fredrickson, positive psychologist, evolutionary psychologist, all of the above, but we're talking about love, what it really is, to what it does to our bodies, what it does for our bodies, and we're going to talk about how to nurture it also. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Barbara, you described love as micro moments of connection. What gets in the way of that?
Well, there's a number of things that get in the way of micro moments of connection. One is simply not valuing them. I mean, if we don't see that the important ways that love connects us and helps us grow happens in these small moments, then we'll just, you know, run right past them. Other things that get in the way are when people don't feel safe in their interpersonal interactions with others. I think that's probably the biggest barrier mm-hmm. for people experiencing love, is that they don't feel, they feel some form of threat in interpersonal interactions. And we know from the research that people who are depressed, anxious, and lonely feel less safe in each day-to-day interaction. And then a third major obstacle is what we mentioned earlier, is just that lack of face-to-face or sensory connection.
You know, there's a million books written about happiness, and for my money, that's probably 999,000 too many. you think it's really love that we're going after? I you know, in my mind, I was thinking, you know, this kind of internal security or kind of wellness or well-being. You think what our body, mind is calling for really is love?
I think it's love. I think it's all the positive emotions. But I think love may actually nourish the body to a greater extent than do other positive emotions. I mean, I think other positive emotions are vital too. I've spent 20 years of my career focusing on them, but I think the data that my research lab has been accumulating suggests that, you know, the positive emotions that we co-experience with others may be the most nourishing of all.
I should say that we resonate with one another on positive. We also do the same with negative emotions. You go in the room with somebody who's anxious or depressed, you're not going to feel so good.
That's true, but there's also one difference that occurs between, you know, negativity resonance and positivity resonance, if you will, and that is that with positive emotions, our awareness expands, and we're more likely to see ourselves as part of some larger whole with the other person. With negative emotions, our awareness narrows, and we're more likely to see ourselves as separate from others. And we get a bit in a self-survival mode instead of a what might be called a species survival mode.
And that really spells the difference, is, you know, our awareness and the scope of our awareness. Barbara, we've got to take a short break now. And when we'll return, I'm going to ask you about research that suggests electronic access can have a negative effect on our biological capacity to connect with other people. So we'll be back after a short break to talk about that. I'm also going to bring in, after our break, Carlin Flora, about how the way we connect with one another is expanding the definition of friend. And our phone number here is 888-477-9499. Join the conversation. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
It's a good day in the Delaware Valley. It's another interesting conversation on Voices in the Family. Hello, I'm Jennifer Lynn with Tanya English.
Hey, Jen.
I produce Voices, and Tanya is our senior science desk reporter here at WHYY. We are parked in Pledge Central, volunteering our time to help with the WHYY Spring Membership Drive. Now, if you know right now, right this very moment, that you want to support this show, this station, please go right ahead. Here's the number, 1-888-345-9499, or go online and make a pledge of support at whyy.org. I would like to get 25 calls this hour. Tanya, what do you think?
I think we can do it. 25 is our mini pledge goal for the hour. Before we do anything, though, let's thank the folks at the Mendelsohn Club. They are a chorus.
Woo!
Oh, very nice. And they are enjoying a lunch from Pagano's Market. But please don't let them eat or take too many bites. Keep them busy. Keep them busy. They are enjoying their lunch from Pagano's Market. Dr. Dan and his guest are talking about connection today, and that is just such a great backdrop for this conversation and for a pledge campaign. You know, we give you all sorts of ways to connect at WHYY, kind of all those different sweet spots of your life and of your interest. And I was just thinking about how does it do it for me? You know, Peter Crimmins kind of focuses on my inspiration and what I should be doing over the weekend. And this last year, Liz Fiedler has really given me some great reminders about the connections in neighborhood and what it means to be in this complicated urban life. I don't live in Delaware, but Shirley Min and Mark Eichmann really keep me in the loop, and they keep you in the loop. I know that too. So the number is 888-345-9499 or go online to whyy.org. One more time, the number, clearly, 888-345-9499.
Yeah, I don't hear many phones. These Mendelsohn folks are like going to break out into song any second because they're not really doing too much. 1-888-345-9499. It's Voices in the Family. You know, I am feeling very honored to be here. That's how I feel connected to this show. I feel it's a privilege to be asked to speak about the professional, trustworthy, insightful, honest, sometimes transformational programming that WHYY brings to you every Monday at noon with Voices in the Family and my friend Dan Gottlieb. It is all that and more. Please show that you agree at 1-888-345-9499. I think I got cut off a little. 1-888-345-9499.
1-888-345-9499. This is our spring pledge drive. Please help us meet our 25 mini goal for that. We're inching up on it, but we're not there yet. I just want to kind of remind people, this is publicly supported radio, and sometimes it's good to just to revisit what that actually means. For me, it means that my boss, Chris Cetullo, is my boss. You know, he and his 30-plus years of editorial experience set the tone for what we do here. Not Governor Corbett, not Mayor Nutter. So your comments, your opinions, and your confidence can help us make sure that we're on the right track and really keep us independent. You can do that by calling 888-345-9499 or online. It's really easy to do there, whyy.org.
Well, you know, Voices in the Family is here for you, much like the other programs here on WHYY. Please be here for us at 1-888-345-9499. We're going to wrap up this little mini pledge break, but we are reminded we want to get 25 calls this hour. Please help us out. I often feel as though this show has a community service feel to it, and I think you are a big part, you, the listener, of that community. Please come through for us today. It's a very important pledge drive, the last of our fiscal year. 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online at whyy.org. We thank you. If you have pledged already today, if you'd like to pledge again, please do. Thanks.
Thank you.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has been providing services to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Founded locally by pioneering schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization now helps individuals across our nation to live healthier, happier, and more productive lives. Over the next 6 weeks, Wawa stores throughout southeastern Pennsylvania and New Jersey will help support Devereaux's work. More details at local Wawa stores.
University of the Sciences in Philadelphia supports WHYY. University of the Sciences accepts transfer students into its undergraduate degree programs and offers convenient evening office hours to help students with their questions and learn about the admission process. Students can also find out about starting or furthering their career in pharmacy, chemistry, healthcare business, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and more. More online at usciences.edu/transfer.
Are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about what my guest Barbara Fredrickson calls our supreme emotion, love. But what we're learning is love is really all about connection, what it is, what it does for us, mind, body, and soul. Barbara wrote Love 2.0, How Our Supreme Emotion Affects Everything We Feel, Think, Do, and Become. She's an expert on positive psychology. She's at the University of North Carolina. I'm also joined now by Carlin Flora. She's a journalist who wrote for many years for Psychology Today. She's the author of Friend Fluence, The Surprising Ways We Friends Make Us Who We Are. And again, our number is 888-477-9499. Carlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
In your book, you said that the way we use the word friend has changed over time, and we hear it used now as a verb. So, like, what does Facebook friend mean anyway?
Right. So because of Facebook, our sort of close, dear friends are streamed together with people who we might know, you know, just very casually, and strangers or work connections, people we don't really know at all. So it creates some confusion on the surface as though there is no hierarchy. But at the same time, I think all of us know the true meaning of friends, and we know who our real friends are as opposed to contacts that we keep up with on Facebook.
You also said that some of us have richer experiences with some online friends because of shared experiences. How so?
Right. So basically, I just want to emphasize that online life reflects offline life. So people who are very active in social media are usually active outside of it, too. So sometimes we have the notion that it's an either or, that if we're connecting online, we're not connecting in the way that Barbara Fredrickson is talking about. So the good news or the positive spin on that is that a lot of us are keeping in touch with friends face-to-face and then using social media to kind of further that connection and conduct it in different ways and over space and time in ways that we couldn't in the past.
How do we know that, Carlin?
Well, we know that there are definitely surveys that show that people who are heavy social network users have more diverse social networks overall than lighter users or non-users of social media. Hmm. There are other studies showing that the number of friends have not gone down, as has been reported in the press. So that's some evidence in favor of that. There's also some negative evidence in terms of what social media is doing for connection. For example, a lot of people who use Facebook a lot have increased feelings of envy because they're seeing their friends portrayed in a highly curated way where struggle and, some other negative parts of lives are not really being showcased. So we often walk away thinking that everyone else's life is perfect except ours. So it's good to remember that this is sort of an edited version of your friends' lives. And to get the whole picture, you really do need to connect in person.
Well, Barbara, you know, it sounds like I'm picking up something you said earlier in the show, that when our relationships are on Facebook, that the focus becomes narrow again rather than a broad focus. Is that a fair guess, you think?
I think it's also the case that the focus is...
Carlin, let's let Barbara answer that, and then
can't hear Barbara on my feed, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was thinking that it's also abstract, so there's a narrowness to it, but there's also an abstraction. Excuse me, I've got a cough in my throat. So what we see on a screen, I need to take a sip of water, sorry.
Well, while you're doing that, we can ask Carlin to, you can take your time, and we can ask Carlin to follow up that question about, you know, the focus of our attention if our, you know, with say Facebook friends or texting or tweeting, does the focus of our attention, does it become more narrow? Barbara talked, you know, in the first segment of our show, I don't know if you heard it, about having a wider lens and focused more on other or the larger world rather than self. Carlin?
Right. So I think that is true, but then there's also another dimension in that some people actually express feelings more honestly online, say via an email, than they can in person. So for some people, there might be a greater ability to form an emotional connection online. But again, the ideal is to always have a balance and to not use online at the expense of this offline connection, but to use both of these tools to further our connection and authentic intimacy building with others.
Barbara, I want to follow up something you said, and you said it also in a New York Times article. You said that our capacity for friendship also obeys the biological law of use it or lose it, which you referred to earlier on. But you go on to say, if you don't regularly exercise your ability to connect face to face, you'll find yourself lacking. How do we know it has to be face to face? For example, when I speak with someone I love on the phone, I sometimes feel the same visceral sensations, that warmth in my chest, something in my body feels like smiling, and that's on the phone.
Right. I actually think voice-to-voice can be as effective as face-to-face. I think that the place where you'll see a more difference is when it becomes abstractions, words on a screen. Now, words on a screen can make for very powerful individual emotions, but they're not shared in real time. And that's, I think, limits our full range of emotional experience. So just like we have, whatever we do habitually influences our bodies and our health through a process of what's called plasticity. We hear a lot about neuroplasticity, how the brain changes with different mental habits. But, you know, we all know that if we're sedentary, we're going to lose muscle tone. It turns out there's also a biological capacity to connect, and that is something that is improved the more you have real-time connection with others, face-to-face, voice-to-voice, and something that erodes a bit with less of that connection.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Kathleen on the line. Hi, Kathleen. You're on Voices.
Hello. I wanted to mention that in both reading and writing emails, sometimes because the voice is absent, the emotional content of the email is not communicated or is misunderstood by the reader, and that a quick follow-up phone call and hearing the voice, even just for a few seconds, often can clarify whether you have understood or misunderstood the emotional content and intent of the writer.
Kind of humanizes that other person. Barbara, what are your thoughts?
Well, definitely. There's all kinds of information that's dropped out when we don't have the nonverbal or not, you know, paralinguistic cues, vocal cues that go with, either face-to-face or shared voice communication. And so much of that information that's lost is about emotions, is about caring or disregarding. You know, so we try really hard to come up with the right emoticons to express what we're saying, but, you know, people don't always understand what those are. So,
I'm one of those people, if my friends are listening. I don't get emoticons, and anything beyond OMG in a text, I'm gone here. So I want to ask you, Carlin, and this is how I introduced you. I want to know how our connections with friends may have a greater hand in our development than even romantic partners and relatives.
Well, I think this dovetails nicely with Dr. Fredrickson's theory that love is something we can experience in connections with many different people. I think that I was coming at it from the angle that we pay a lot of attention to our romantic relationships and parenting, how we're parenting, and we don't tend to think too consciously about how our friends influence us and how we're sort of built to adapt to the norms of our friends groups. And this is particularly true in childhood, and friends, after all, are something that we have throughout life, where someone, for instance, might be married only for one portion of their life. So my point is that when you think of your values and habits and the direction that your life has taken, it's important to look at your friends and not just these other relationships.
Yeah, I
that
think that's such
more carefully.
That's such an important point that's often overlooked. Unfortunately, we've got to say goodbye to you, Carlin. We've got to go to another break. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Carlin. I think what you have to offer is really interesting and really took care of a lot of my anxiety about internet connections. When we come back, We're going to talk with Barbara Fredrickson some more about whether the Beatles got it right when they said, love is all you need. We're talking about connection today. Connection and love. Our number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Connection is important. Please connect with us. Good afternoon. I'm WHYY's Jennifer Lynn here with Tanya English, our science reporter.
Hey, Jen.
And hi there. This is our spring membership drive. And you know what that means? We would love to hear from you right now. Please consider becoming a member, renewing your membership, or making an additional contribution by calling this number 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at whyy.org.
And we want you to know that your pledge of support is appreciated. So if you can contribute $60 for the year, that's about $5 a month, we would like to give you our thank you gift. Learning from the Heart is Dr. Dan's DVD. At a pledge level of $100 for the year, Dr. Dan's The Wisdom of Sam hardcover book. That's a little bit of his treatise and insights from his grandson. That's at $100. That's our gift to you for $100 of support. The number is 888-345-9499. Or you can go online at whyy.org. I think, like I said, the connection is such a great topic, because when I think about connection, I think about the web of people that we really need to get anything done. We need supporters to help us really reach our goal. We're looking at a mini goal of 25 for this hour. We're knocking them down, getting there, but not quite there yet. So we need people to call 888-345-9499.
I produce Voices in the Family every week, and I work with an amazing team of professionals to bring you a product that I think is intelligent, intimate, it is important, but of course we cannot do any of this without your support. So please pledge now. This is your opportunity. Join the community. You actually are already part of the community, but you've got to be a standout and really give us a little feedback here by calling 1-888-345-9499. We have volunteers staffing the phones from the Mendelsohn Club. And they are noshing on some lunch provided by Pagano's Market. Thank you for that, Pagano's.
We do need you to call. You are part of this. Maybe when you were in college or between jobs, you relied on others to keep WHYY strong. But what we need you to do now is call 888-345-9499. It's your turn to step up. If you've let your membership lapse or you've never pledged before, it's your turn to step up. One more time, the number is 888-345-9499.
It's easy to let that membership lapse. I feel bad saying that, but I've done it myself. But then I hang around, I listen to Voices, I listen to Terry Gross Fresh Air, Radio Times, and then I'm reminded every once in a while, come on, we need you, we need your support. 1-888-345-9499, and I step up and I do that. We bring you a variety of topics here on Voices, some that you won't hear on other programs. That is very special. We're proud to do it. You give us a lot of input as well as to what you want us to do, and we listen to that. It's a give and take. Today's a day to give. 1-888-345-9499.
You know, a gift is kind of like a vote of confidence in us, and it gives us the kind of flexibility to really be there for the next big news story, to hire a reporter when we think we need to go deeper in our coverage. Help us do that by pledging your gift at 888-345-9499 or go online to whyy.org. And when you go there, you could send a little link and tell a friend that you pledged online and let everybody know that you've done your due diligence and that we're part of your day.
We'd like to make our goal today, 1-888-345-9499, or pledge online at whyy.org. We can only make that goal with your help. Thank you if you've pledged already, and if you'd like to pledge again, please do. We thank you for your support.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417, or online at philafound.org.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with evolutionary psychologist Barbara Fredrickson. Her new book, Love 2.0, How Our Supreme Emotion Affects Everything We Feel, Think, Do, and Become. She joins us from the University of North Carolina. And our number here, if you want to join the conversation, is 888-477-9499. Barbara, you know, we were talking about big picture versus small picture earlier on. And I want to take a big picture of love. You're talking about these micro moments, but so what does the word mean anymore when you say I am in love, or I love my wife, or I have a lover? What does that mean? You're talking about micro moments. Is there a state of being in love?
Yes. So when I look at it,
please just say yes.
There is a much bigger love system that we're all part of as well. And that can refer to our commitments, our bonds, our soulmates, you know, the people whom we feel, you know, just tied up with in our lives in really profound and intimate ways. And what I'm arguing is that in this broader love system, there's a tiny engine that keeps it all going. And that tiny engine are these micro moments of connection. And I think this is a real practical view. It's not just a hair-splitting scientific view. It's a practical view because it opens our eyes to the kinds of moments that we would be best to create if we want to keep those relationships strong and healthy. That we can't just say, you know, this long-running joke that I've said with my husband is like, well, I told you I loved you 20 years ago, and if that changes, I'll let you know. You know, we can't just rely on that as an abstraction. We need to recreate these positive connections, you know, frequently. Just like I think the analogy to our daily intake of fruits and vegetables is an apt one. I mean, we can't just survive on one piece of broccoli in 2013. You know, however much my kids would like that to be true, we need a wide variety of nutrients that come from all different kinds of fruits and vegetables.
So what is now, that? What is it? What does that look like, this micro moment? How can we cultivate that?
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons I wrote my book, Love 2.0, is to not only describe what the latest science points to, but also to help people see different ways that they could create and foster more of these micro moments in their life. And kind of ironically, the best strategies for doing so are ones that you undertake by yourself, not with another person, because you can't just go to the idea of synchrony and say, okay, I'm going to try to synchronize my gestures with another person. That leads to just this awkwardness and, you know, questions about your sincerity. I mean, that's just not the level at which to intervene. I got interested in this work because I started doing research about almost a decade ago on loving kindness meditation. It's an ancient Buddhist practice that really focuses people, pulls them out of their cocoon of self-absorption and allows them to be more genuinely concerned about other people. So the book provides some meditation practices, but also some what I call micro moment practices, just ways of getting you to think more about connection day to day in ways that raise the priority of those moments, so that when you are interacting with people as your day unfolds, you're more genuinely attuned to them and connected to them.
You know, Barbara, as I listen to you, it occurs to me that Orthodox Jews say prayers of thanks all day, every day, for everything, every little thing. There's even a prayer for when you come out of the bathroom. You thank God that all the tubes worked and opened and closed when they were supposed to. But, you know, the more we learn about gratitude, I mean, that's what a prayer really is.
It's right.
Thank you. And in a prayer, it's thank you to a higher power. But it really is about gratitude. And, you know, if we can cultivate gratitude, and that's fairly easy to do, that connects us. That's a connection to
exactly.
to the world around us and the people around us. And that kind of fits with this metta meditation or loving kindness.
You know, it really does, and it, you know, underscores that we have far more steering power over what emotions we experience and when than we give ourselves credit for. A lot of times we think of our emotional life as just like the weather, something that rains down on us. But, you know, our daily habits of whether we're even noticing things as a gift to be cherished, I mean, that's the kind of orientation that would unlock more gratitude. If we're just even noticing that, you know, it's a possibility that I might share a good experience with this, you know, service clerk. And that would make us both healthier and more enlivened for the rest of the day. That even seeing that as a possibility is an important first step towards creating these moments of positivity.
Yeah, what you call a moment of positivity, I mean, I call it almost a spiritual divine moment when you can look in look in someone other's eyes and just experience their humanity in yours just for that moment. That's, to me, that's a divine experience. And it only takes
definitely.
A few seconds.
Right. And it's that's why I think what's really interesting is that, you know, we're discovering how emotions are tied up with these feelings of spirituality or divine or feeling a part of something larger than the self, tapping into something larger.
So let's go from macro to divine and spirituality to micro. Tell us about the vagus nerve.
Yeah, the vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve that comes from your brainstem and connects to your heart and other internal organs. And it's a key part of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is, you know, the calm and connect aspect of the autonomic nervous system, in contrast to the fight or flight sympathetic nervous system. And scientists measure the health or the effectiveness of your vagus nerve by looking at heart rate variability, and in particular the variability in heart rate that's associated with your breathing patterns. And a healthy form of vagal activity or vagal tone is a slight increase in your heart rate when you're breathing in and a slight slowing of your heart rate when you're breathing out. And that has been that measure of vagal tone at rest has been associated with all kinds of aspects of physical health: better cardiovascular regulation, better glucose regulation, better regulation of the immune system, as well as better psychological skills, like better abilities to regulate your attention and your behavior.
All right, so don't shoot me for this next question, but what's love got to do with this?
I know, that's fair game. our latest research shows that when people learn to self-generate more micro moments of connection through practicing loving-kindness meditation, they are able to show improvements in their vagal tone. And the reason that this is interesting is that, you know, past scientists have thought of vagal tone as something largely stable, sort of like your height once you reach adulthood. And, you know, that it's not something that changes very easily, that it's just sort of, you know, rhythmically reflects people's propensity for health or illness. But we find that when people practice loving kindness meditation, they're novices and they practice it for just 2 months or so, their vagal tone improves. And actually, their initial vagal tone forecasts who is able to get the most out of the meditation in terms of converting it into micro moments of connection in daily life. And so there's an upward spiral relationship here where health and love build on one another.
So you're talking about the science that proves out what so many wise people have said over the years, including psychiatrist Carl Menninger of the Menninger Clinic. He said that the benefits of love, it doesn't matter whether you're giving it or receiving it, that it doesn't matter. It's the experience of love that changes your life.
Right. And we've known for so long that people who have more loving relationships, more loving connections in daily life live longer. And this new research helps us, you know, kind of break that apart. How is it that these, you know, ephemeral experiences get under the skin and into the cell and change who we are? You know, we're now being able to unpack that process to see the connection between love and health and a more concrete level.
Well, Barbara, unfortunately, we are out of time. I would love to talk with you for a couple more hours. Your book was wonderful, and I thank you so much for writing it and for joining us for this hour.
Oh, this has been fun. Thanks for having me on.
For me, too. Barbara Fredrickson is a evolutionary psychologist. She's written Love 2.0, How Our Supreme Emotion Affects Everything We Feel, Think, Do, and Become. Well, I want to thank all of you for listening to the show, and I want to give you a new phone number to call with my humble request. The number is 888-345-9499. This is our spring pledge break, and this is our last pledge break of this fiscal year, so we'd love you to join the family, show your support by picking up the phone and calling that number. I'm going to hand this over to my producer and dear friend, Jennifer Lynn. Jennifer?
Thank you, Dan. Jennifer Lynn here in Pledge Central with Tanya English, our science reporter, senior science reporter with a bad cold, but she's suffering through, helping out today. 1-888-345-9499, our number. We're talking about connection on today's show. Dan did a great job with Barbara Fredrickson. And, you know, we're asking you to do another kind of connecting and make that pledge. Maybe you're renewing. Maybe you're a new membership. Maybe you're giving a second time today because you love Voices in the Family. 1-888-345-9499, please.
You know, not suffering through it all. I feel great to be here. And with Dr. Dan, you know, tuning in for me at Mondays at 12 kind of feels like sitting down with a neighbor. He's been doing this job for more than 25 years, you know. And if that's valuable to you, call us. We need you to call. We need you to be the next one to call at 888-345-9499. At a time when other broadcast companies are shrinking their budgets and shrinking their staff, we keep on keeping on. You can help us make that choice at 888-345-9499.
Well, if you're a